So first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak here. It's a big honor for me to be able to speak at Spencer's birthday conference. I would like just to say a few words before I start the mathematical part. So I realized at that moment that for most of mathematicians, maybe for every mathematician, there are some small number of mathematicians who played a decisive role in the mathematical development of this individuum, and usually it's characterized by the condition that this person read like more than half or something of papers of that person. So I think this might be considered the definition of somebody as a student of somebody. So in this sense, I think I'm a student of Spencer, although I met him much later than I first started looking at his papers. And I was always amazed by the way Spencer does mathematics, so I compared it to myself and maybe to the fallen. So like when people, let's say in Asia, they're looking for water, so they try to find a way to find out where the water is. And there are some people who have this incredible intuition, so they just walk around and they stop at here. Then they go some other way, someone say here, and so on. And amazingly, the water is there when they say so, but if you try to imitate, it's really hopeless. So I thought this is the way Spencer does mathematics. So he just points out where the water is and digs a little bit, and then it's always there. So if you try to see what where the water, where the future mathematics is, so you just open his papers, and probably especially those which are not read that widely. Okay, now talking about mathematics, so what I wanted to do today is explain the following point. So I will put it in a wider context and actually cut it down quickly. So I want to explain that the real mixed Hodge structure on a rational motivic homotopy type of some algebraic variety X. It's defined, let's say, over C or over some field which lives in C. Then this can be described as, and actually this is equivalent to understanding and first of all writing down some Feynman integral related to X. And it's true not only when you consider an algebraic variety, but you can consider a family of algebraic varieties, and it's still true. But in this case, we get the variations of real mixed Hodge structures. So I want immediately to cut this down because I will not have time to dig to the whole story in the situation which I want to consider today, when the dimension of X is 1. And when I say X, I would like to assume that X is smooth. So we have a smooth curve. Well, so if you have a smooth curve over complex numbers, so it could be open. So the picture is like that. So we have a compact curve, which I called X. Actually, well, let me call this Y, which I called X. And then we have a finite set of points, which for some technical reason I would like to assume a non-empty set of points, S. So you consider X minus S. And then we are looking, in this particular situation, this rational motivic homotopy type, there's nothing else but just the pronilpotent completion of the fundamental group of this topological surface based at one of these points. So we have one of the points S0, and I wrote S0, but I actually mean some tangential base point here. And S is not an empty set, which is a union of some finite number of points, S0, S1, and so on, Sn. And V0 is tangent vector. So in order to explain this kind of I have to explain three things. So first of all, I have to explain what does it mean motivic fundamental group, which is what rational homotopy type isn't this case. I have to explain what does it mean a real mixed Hoyt structure. This is what I will do first. And I have to explain the Feynman integral related to that and this connection. So I will start from the notion of mixed Hoyt structure, although I'm sure all of you know this. I just would like to introduce some notations. So let me remind you that a real mixed Hoyt structure, as was defined by Deligne, is the following data. So you actually can spell this data in two different ways. So you either can say, and that's what Deligne did in the 70s, that you have a V, which is a finite, just a vector space over R. You can assume it's finite dimensional if you want. Then we have two filtrations in this vector space. We have increasing W filtration, which is a filtration on V, and we have a decreasing Hoyt filtration, which is a filtration on the complexification on V, and we have a condition that if you take the associated graded with respect to the weight filtration, then this is, if you do this for associated graded of weight N, you're supposed to get a pure Hoyt structure, and so in particular it's isomorphic to the direct sum of HPQ, the Hoyt decomposition, and you can actually tensor phi, yes. So you can write down what it is. So it's isomorphic to direct sum of Fp and Fq when you consider sort of the induced Hoyt and conjugate Hoyt filtration on this associated graded. So you're supposed to have this formula. This is a definition which I'm not going to use at all. So you can forget it right away. Now, the definition which I am going to use is close to what Deligne did, I believe, in 82. And so this is equivalent definition. And the theorem, which also is due to Deligne, the theorem which he proved is that this data, which you, I said, can forget, is equivalent to the following one. You have a bigrating on a vector on the complexification of some real vector space. Well, let's call it VPQ. Over all possible P and Q, so now no condition that P plus Q equals to something. And in addition to that, you have an important operator N, which acts on V. And this operator satisfies some mild conditions, and this decomposition satisfies some mild conditions with respect to real numbers. So the complex conjugate of VPQ is VQP, and also the nilpotent operator has the property that its complex conjugate is minus the operator itself. Now, then, if you have this data, you can go to the... Yes, I mean, V will be VC all the time. So if you want to go from this picture to that one, then again, according to Deligne, so you do the following. So if you have here this VPQ N, you can assign the weight and Hoyt filtration as follows. So first of all, if you have a bigraded vector space, so it looks like that. It's a bigraded vector space. So its vector spaces sit on the grid of this, on this kind of rectangular grid. So you can do the standard weight filtration by taking everything which is below this kind of line. And this way you get V standard. And you can also do the standard Hoyt filtration by taking everything which stands here. And so if this is the level P, then you get this, the standard Hoyt filtration. And now what you have to do, you have to introduce a new filtrations on this bigraded vector space, and you take the V standard as your W standard, as your W filtration, and as your Hoyt filtration, you take the rotation by the exponent of N of this standard Hoyt filtration. So that's it. So the output is that if you want to define a mixed-coil structure, you have to give yourself a bigrate vector space, which is groove respect to W of what it's supposed to be, and a nilpotent operator. Actually, and this is the data which I want to exhibit, except that the nilpotent operator you will see in the end of the lecture is not exactly the Delinz operator, but related to it in a certain canonical way. Okay, so this is the first part of the background. The next part of the background is what is the motivic fundamental group, and actually the real question is, what is this bigraded object on which we want to define an important operator? So, but let me return to a topological situation. So you have the augmentation ideal, I, in the topological fundamental group of X minus S, and you take the projective limit of the group algebra of the fundamental group divided by the powers of this augmentation ideal, and you get a completed Hopf algebra, complete Hopf algebra over rational numbers, because the coproduct is induced by this formula acting. I is the augmentation ideal. Oh, yeah, in the group rings. Thank you. So you have this pronilpotent completion, and inside of this pronilpotent completion, there is a subset of the primitive part, which is important to me, so I denote this L X minus S VW, and this is a pronilpotent Lie algebra. Pronilpotent Lie algebra. So this is the guy which, according to Benenson, is an object of motivic origin. Is of motivic origin. This is Benenson 79 construction. And in particular, it has a mixed coil structure which was discovered by many people, by Morgan. This is the work of Chen, Morgan, Sullivan, about the mixed coil structure on this Lie algebra L. So what we are going to do, we are going to define a real mixed coil structure, but in a completely different way. So, okay. So, first of all, as it's clear from this reminding about mixed coil structures, the thing which we want to know what is the associated graded of this motivic object. So if you take this motivic fundamental group, so this is a mixed object, this is an object in this non-existent yet abelian category of all mixed motives, but we can ask the question, what is the associated graded for this object with respect to the weight filtration? Because that's exactly what we need here. Yes? Yes? You mean LM? You certainly understand this because this is just a Q vector space. Yeah. No, wait. So as I said, I'm not going to worry about motives at all. I mean, I bring motives just for motivation. So, because I don't want to be dragged into the discussion whether they exist or whether they do not exist and so on and so on. So I just need this Q vector space. And the only statement which I need is that on this Q vector space there is a weight filtration. And I'm going to describe in more concrete terms what the associated graded of this weight filtration is. Then I'm going to construct an important operator on this vector space which will give you a mixed coil structure. What?
What's the vector space?
I am about to write this down. This is the free Lie algebra, so I put in notation, but then I'll explain what it is. So this is the free Lie algebra generated by the associate graded with respect to the weight filtration for the homology of X minus S. Now this L stands for the free graded
Lie algebra generated by this graded vector space. Now, you can treat this as an object in the category of pure motives, but if you start asking me questions about this, I would just say that consider it as a graded vector space or better as a real mixed Hoyt structure. So how you define actually this Lie algebra? This sits in the tensor algebra generated by the same fellow, and it is determined as a primitive part of this tensor algebra. So at least this is the guy I'm really looking for, because it is on this guy I want to define my nilpotent operator n. So I'm supposed to come up with some nilpotent operator acting here, and as soon as, I mean, this satisfies essentially no condition, as you see from here, just some reality condition, and as soon as I will be done, this will be a mixed Hoyt structure. Okay? Now, now we have to define, we have to go a little bit further into linear algebra before I will be able to define this linear operator. So, what? I mean, it's a pure Hoyt structure. Sorry, this is a Hoyt structure. Bigrading comes from the fact that this is a pure Hoyt, it's a direct sum of Hoyt structures of type 1-1 and the Hoyt structure 0-1-1-0. Okay? Then you do tensor algebra with this Hoyt structure. So you take, that's why I wrote down this here, you take tensor algebra of this fellow, and then there is a coproduct, the standard one, and you take a sub-object. So you get a bigrading. So the only thing, all this is quite trivial. So the only thing which is missing is this operator n. This is the subject of my talk. Now, before I go to this n, I need a little bit more of linear algebra. So given an associative algebra A, I can define the vector space C of A, which is defined as a quotient of A divided by the commutator and A and A. Now, by this, I mean not an ideal, but a vector space spanned by elements AB minus BA, where both these elements belong to augmentation ideal of A. So I assume that A has a unit and a complement to that unit, and I don't want to touch the unit because otherwise I will kill the whole thing if I put A equals to 1. So I don't do that, and therefore I get this vector space. If A was an object of more fancy category, for example, a category of real Hoyt structures, this will be an object in that category. So you can take any pure category you want and do this linear algebra construction in that category. Now I need slightly more than that. So I need to introduce these two objects. I call them C of X star. And this is a cyclic envelope of the tensor algebra of this guy which stays here, which is Gr W H, whom I need, homology of X here. And I need a dual object. What? X minus S, absolutely. Thank you, Arthur. That's really essential. X minus S. And I need the dual object C of X, this star appeared from previous life, C of XS, which is a similar thing, but now I'm using cohomology. All right. So now I claim that these two vector spaces have some structure. Namely, this one is a Lie algebra, and this is therefore a Lie coalgebra. I will not need this, but only the fact that this is a Lie algebra. And actually, this Lie algebra appears when we study derivations of this one. So let me explain this in more detail. So I want to, I promise not to speak about motives, but still, just for motivation, I want to go from the Hoyt realization to the Eliadic realization and just mention in passing that this important operator N is gives you the action of the Hodge-Galois group on this vector space, and it's similar to the action of the usual Galois group in the Eliadic realization. But when you look to the latter, to the action of the Eliadic Galois group, you realize that the Galois group, when it acts on plenipotent completion, has some properties. Namely, first of all, there is a canonical loop around this element which the Galois group kills, and there is also canonical conjugacy classes of loops which come in by traveling from this tangential base point to any other deleted point, and the action of the Galois group is supposed to preserve the corresponding conjugacy class. So let's try to formalize this observation, but really in linear algebra terms. So let's make a definition. We call a derivation of a derivation D of, let's say, Lie algebra, or maybe start from associative algebra, which was denoted by T of something. So derivation of this associative algebra, and don't forget group W here, is special if it looks like it comes from the action of the Galois group. And formally, it is special if, first of all, this derivation takes the canonical generator, which corresponds to this puncture, and this canonical generator is denoted by X as 0, and canonical generator here is denoted by X sub S. So I probably should add here to the data that we have canonical generators XS sitting in this GER W H1. The elements, but they also generates of this tensor generators of this tensor algebra and the Lie algebra. So the elements in GER W, but they're generators of this associative algebra. So we have canonical generators, and we want to postulate that this derivation kills the one which corresponds to the base point, and with the others, it does the following. So if you take XS, then it brings it to a commutator with some element of your tensor algebra. So this is what is called a special derivation. So it's a derivation which has this property, which motivated by the Eliadic picture. Now comes the claim from linear algebra, which tells you that there exists a canonical map from this cyclic guy to the special derivations of the tensor algebra. Now, there exists a canonical map like that, which I will define in a second, which is surjective and essentially isomorphism. I don't want to say this an isomorphism because this is slightly wrong, but the kernel is so small that it's kind, you can say it's kind of isomorphism. I don't want to go to this little issue. What is the little kernel of this map? So I call this map kappa, and I'm going to define this map right now. But first of all, as soon as I will define this map, you will see that it explains why this fellow is a Lie algebra, because it maps essentially isomorphically to a sub Lie algebra offer given to us Lie algebra, the Lie algebra of derivations. Now construction of this map kappa. Well, the point is that kappa is given by kind of non-commutative Poisson geometry, by which I mean the following. So let's suppose that we have an element F which lives in this cyclic envelope of my tensor algebra. Now, this tensor algebra is spanned, is generated by, you know, it's given by non-commutative polynomials of this canonical generators XS of the homology, of the associated grade of the homology, and some basis in the homology, which just will be denoted TI, QI. So altogether, this is XS, Pi, and Qi. This is nothing else but this group W of H1 of X minus S. So I just choose a basis for my convenience. Now, if this is homology at the moment, But it's not just a polynomial, it is a cyclic polynomial. So a typical example of cyclic polynomial is something like that. So you put something like x1, x2, x1, p, q, and then p. And then you make it cyclic, which means that if you read this in a different way, for example, if you start from here, you get the same. This is q, p, x1, x2, x1, p. That what means to produce you a cyclic, an element of this in the cyclic tensor product. So now I want to assign to this cyclic non-commutative polynomial a derivation. And the way it works is the following. So I claim that this kappa of f, which means the derivation which corresponds to the cyclic non-commutative polynomial f, it acts on the generators as follows. So the generator Pi goes just to dF over dQi. Qi goes to minus dF over dPi. And Xs goes to dF dXs, commutator Xs. Is that clear? No, they're just generators. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I see that, some people like is getting up, so let me write this down again. So Pi corresponds to dF over dQi. Qi corresponds to minus dF dPi. And Xs goes to the derivation, it goes to the commutator of Xs and dF dXs. I change the sign there. If you want, I can put it here. Now I ask the question, is it clear? Is it clear? That's the first question. No, it cannot be clear because I did not define what is dF over dQ. And this is one of the points. So it absolutely cannot be clear because I didn't say that there is a partial derivative. If you have some tensor algebra generated by some vector space, I mean span of some vector space of y1 and so on, yn, so I use the basis here, then if you take cyclic envelope of that, and if you take some cyclic polynomial here, there is an operation of partial derivative which goes from the cyclic world to the standard algebra and which does the following. So let's suppose you have some cyclic element which looks like y1, y2, y1, y3. Now, if you want to make partial derivative with respect to y1, then what we do, we take any appearance of y1 here and crossed out, so we can do it here and here. And so the result will be, so this takes this guy, either, so if we crossed out here, we have y2, y1, y3. And if we crossed here, we have y3, y1, y2. After that comment, so hopefully this formula is clear. So again, what I did, I cooked up a way how from a cyclic word, make a derivation of a free associative algebra generated by some vector space. And this vector space has this PQ and X generators. And so it looks like this Hamiltonian vector field. So and F looks like it's Hamiltonian. So the generator PI goes to DF over QI, DQI, similarly to QI. And this one goes to the derivation which acts on X, XS by conjugation with DF, with taking commutator with DF over DXS. Oh, what? Because when it was a cyclic word before, When I choose one of the words, I broke the cyclic symmetry. And now this is a real element of the tensor product. Okay? Okay, so this is a little linear algebra machine which I need and which is explained by the following fact, that if you want to look at the Lie algebra of all derivations of this associative algebra, tensor algebra generated by Gurr W of H1, so this is a way to produce some derivations, and this is, I would say, and this is the only way, because the theorem is that any derivation can be written this way and more or less uniquely. So this is the way, more or less, to produce a basis in the space of all special derivations of the tensor algebra, and that's actually what the Lie algebra of the Galois group does in any of the setting, motivic, et al., or Hodge, because it does produce such kind of derivation, and therefore it is given by a linear combination of elements like that. So if you want to produce my operator N, it's supposed to be a linear combination of derivations which come from the C, but I just have to tell you which one. And this is the key part of the story, the third part, which I call the Hodge correlators. So whatever I told you before was either well-known or simple linear algebra, and now I'm getting to the job, so I really need to define this operator N. Not, well, maybe not exactly in this form, but it's due to Drinfeld. In his paper on 1990, that's his idea. I mean, it's not exactly what he did was in the case when there was no P and Q, but it's his idea. Okay. So now Hodge correlators, so they, first of all, who they are. So I want to define the Hodge correlator map, which will be a linear map from this dual guy. So you see on the top you have CXS and you have dual to that. The dual is constructed using cohomology. So I want to define this map from CXS dual, just a real number. And I call this the Hodge correlator map. So I can put here correlator map. Now, let's suppose I did this. So I sum in this. I define the green operator. And so I sum in this. We define a green operator. And the way we define the green operator is the following. So, first of all, we take the C of X as check, tensor C of X S, and there is a canonical element here, which is called the identity element or Casimir element, whatever name you like. It corresponds to the identity map from C to C. Now, we have this correlator map, and so what we can do, we can apply this correlator map, tensor the identity map on the second variable, and so we will end up in some element of this Lie algebra, C of X, S, here, which by the map kappa can be mapped to the derivations, actually special derivations, but not of the tensor algebra, but is a subpart of this, the subspace of the derivations of the Lie algebra generated by Gurr W H1 of X minus S. And that's close to be it. I mean, we take this identity element here, and we go through this correlator map and this map kappa, and we produce something, some operator, I call it operator G, which is closely related to N. I mean, N is some kind of modification of this operator G, so morally, we did what I promised. So we produce here some operator which acts on this vector space, because this operator sits in the derivations of this Lie algebra. Yes, I mean, I didn't tell you the construction of the correlator. It's a little lemma that will preserve the primitive part. So this is the format in which I construct this operator N. So again, so the key part of this format is, first of all, the construction of this correlator map. This is something I didn't tell you yet. And then goes this linear algebra, which tells you how, having this correlator map, you transform it into the operator N, which defines you the mixed Hoyt structure. So now it's about half of my time. So now I can define the main here. This is the correlator map. So let me do this. Oh, what should I sacrifice here? Okay. So first of all, I need to define the green function. And this is a quite standard thing. So what you do, you notice that there is a diagonal in X cross X, and therefore there is the distribution related to the diagonal, which I call the delta function of the diagonal, which gives you identity map on cohomology. And on the other hand, you can cook up also identity map on the cohomology by using the Hoyt theory. And for this, you write down the following formula. So you take the two canonical projections from X to X to X, and then you define this second representative of the identity map by the following formula. You say, you just take, okay, I need a little bit more data. I need to choose some volume form, mu, on my complex curve. And then if I choose some basis, omega 1 and so on, omega n, a basis which spans holomorphic plus anti-holomorphic differentials on X, I can write down the identity operator in a standard way, just as omega I P1 upper star omega Y 1 I, sorry, omega I, which P2 upper star omega I check, where omega check is the dual basis with respect to the cup product in the space of holomorphic differentials. So you take the sum, you also take this two guys, which corresponds to the two-dimensional cohomology classes. And so what you wrote down here is a representative for identity map from H from the cohomology to itself. But on the other hand, you have the delta function of the diagonal, so you can subtract. And now you have a distribution. This is an honest 1-1 distribution, which has cohomology class 0. And therefore, by DD bar lemma, you can write down this as DD bar of some green function. You can normalize by dividing by 2 pi I. And so this is the definition of the green function. So, no, you just take a basis in holomorphic and anti-holomorphic differentials. So just take a basis in the first-dimensional homology group of the compact curve and take the harmonic representatives of this basis. That's what I said. Okay, now we have the green function, and so we can start this Feynman integral game as follows. So I remind you that what I have to do is to construct some linear map from cyclic words constructing on cohomology to real numbers. The way it goes is this. So you start from a circle. This is not like in Spencer's lecture a real circle, but it's kind of imaginary circle, on which you put your cyclic word based on the cohomology group. And so I remind you that the vector space we are talking about is Gr of the first dimensional cohomology group. And so the generators there, they either correspond to a missing point S, like S1, S2, S3, S4, or maybe they are holomorphic differentials, omega 1, omega 2, or maybe anti-holomorphic differentials. So something like that.
So we draw a cyclic work which is from the cyclic envelope of this vector space, and we want to assign to this picture a number. So the way we assign a number goes as follows. We draw a plane trivial length graph which is decorated by this cyclic work. Now I have to do this business of writing down trivial length graph. So for example, like that. So this is a plane trivial length graph T. So T, a plane, three valent graph. You're right. It's a trivial length tree decorated by some cyclic work W, which lives in this cyclic envelope of the cohomology space. And now what we have to do, we have to assign to this picture a number. So we want to assign to this picture a real number. So let's do that. So for this, I need a little preparation here. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to say the following, that I put on this interior vertices some running points of my curve. So in this case, there will be six running points of my curve X. So XI belongs to my curve. And then I'm going to cook up, so first of all, I'm going to put green functions on every edge here. So put green, actually I probably have to use this, green function. Here we put a G of X1, X2. And you do the same thing with any other H which you see. So you put green functions here. So this green function lives here. Huh? Helene, I don't hear you. So for every vertex, for every edge, there are two parameters here which live on X. So you can take a function which lives on X cross X, and this is my green function. And you can put this on this product of two curves, and you can lift it to the product of all kind of curves which you see here. And so you get a bunch of functions each assigned to this edge or to this edge. Or to this edge, this, and this. But you do not assign anything to the edges where in the end you see differential forms, because just you don't do it. Okay. Now, the next step, and almost close to the final step, which you do with this collection of functions, you produce out of them a certain differential form. So there is a general device for that. So if you have M, which is a complex manifold of any dimension, and if you take the linear space of smooth functions on M and take its M plus first exterior power, there is a natural way how to construct using M plus one functions a differential M form on this manifold, which is defined as follows. So let me give you examples first. So if you have just one function, you produce the zero form out of this function, which is just F. If you have two functions, F1, F0, and F1, you have to produce a one form, and this one form is F0 dc F1 minus F1 dc F0. And there is a natural way to continue. I just write down the formula. So phi 0 wedge and so on wedge phi m goes to alternating sum divided actually by m plus 1 factorial of the following expression. So you take the first function you have F0, then you
apply the D operator to this function, you have phi, phi 0. You apply the D to this function many times, let's say k times. Then you stop doing this and start applying D bar. And take it with a sign and alternate. And this is the way how you having M plus 1 function can produce M form. Okay? Now, we just take this construction and apply to the functions which we have here. So, for example, here we have, let's count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 functions. So, we have 10 functions which correspond to these green edges, and therefore, we can produce 9 form out of them. But we also have a little help from the omegas, from this purple edges, because for each purple edge, we have this differential form sitting here, which we can somehow push to this curve, which corresponds, in this case, to the vertex x3. So we kind of push this form to this curve. And so we have extra 1, 2, 3, 1 forms. So we get 9 plus 3, altogether 12 form. On the other hand, if you count how many vertices you have exactly 6 vertices, and so we have a 12 form lives on x to c raised to power 6, so the dimensions just match. So now you can define this correlator map. You can say that this correlator of the cyclic word W, actually, I just noticed that I cannot leave this blackboard, so I write it here. So what I'm going to say is that we have now this form of maximal degree which lives on the product of my curves, which I assign it to vertices, so we can just integrate and get a number. And then we take the sum of these numbers over all plane trivial entries which we can inscribe in this picture, in the cyclic word. No, no. So you can check that this always works exactly as I said. Whatever number of S's you have, and there's one exception which you might not notice. Whatever number of S's you have and W's which you have, this recipe always gives me a differential form of top degree. Okay? It's a little combinatorial statement. Okay? So there is one little exception to this rule, but if you notice, let me know. I hope you will not right now. So it's not essential. All right. So now I'm writing this correlator map. So I said that the correlator map applied to this cyclic word W is going to be the sum over all plane trivalent trees decorated by W. Decorated by W in the way I explained. W is a cyclic product of these S's and omegas, and you make this fake circle where they sit, and now you start putting all plane trivial entries which can fit in this circle, and there are finitely many of them. And so for this, for each plane trivial entry T decorated by W, you make this construction. So you construct this differential form which so we take this differential form constructed using T and W, and you integrate this differential form over x to raised to power given by vertices. So vertices means internal vertices here. And after you do this integration, you get a number which depends on the input, and this input is a cyclic word. So I get what I promised. So I get a linear map from the cyclic words to real numbers. So that's the end of the construction. Now comes the theorem that this construction does exactly what it's supposed to do.
This is
not yet, by the word Feynman integral, different people understand two different things. One people says that the Feynman integral is integral over infinite dimensional space of functions or something like that, which has no meaning at the moment whatsoever. Then I will write down this integral in a second, which gives you all these integrals. But then there is a standard procedure which Feynman actually invented, which tells you that you can introduce some parameter in this integral which makes no sense whatsoever. You can tend this parameter to zero and take asymptotic expansion. And in the process of asymptotic expansion, you are getting finite dimensional integrals, which sometimes converge and sometimes divergent. Like Spencer's lecture was about making these divergent integrals convergent integrals. So in this case, it will be convergent always. So in that sense, the answer to your question is it's a Feynman integral, but not yet. So let me just finish. So the theorem is that the real Mieshoy structure defined this way coincides with the standard one. Now, the content of this theorem is purely analytical. It tells you that you can calculate some kind of integrals, namely the one which I introduced right now and call them Hodge correlators. So each of them is a sum, finite sum of convergent integrals. By the way, the very fact that this integral is convergent is true but not completely obvious. So this is a statement that those integrals are actually equal to some other numbers which are defined from the standard way to introduce the real Mieshoy structure there. And just to get a sense what kind of results we are talking about, let me show you some simplest of possible integrals which we see here. So let's take an example. The Mieshoy structures are equal. This implies that the corresponding numbers are equal. If you want to make the statement precise, it will take me longer than the time I have, because I have to introduce the other Mieshoy structure, I have to introduce the operator N here, modify this operator, and then claim that they coincide. The numbers coincide. So examples. So the first example, to answer Dorff's question in a more visible way. So let's take X to be a complex projective line. Let's take, for example, S to be just a set of 3 points. Then it's a theorem that if you take the motivic fundamental group of projective line minus 3 points based at V infinity, then the period, the collection of numbers which the Mieshoy structure C is precisely the Q span of this multiple zeta values. So in particular, they involve zeta of n, zeta n1, n2, and so on. So that's the quality of two infinite dimensional vector spaces, which you can put it, you can break it in finite dimensional pieces if you want. But if you look at the definition, none of the definition of multiple zeta values appears in my definition, because I consider integrals over a whole curve, and I never consider iterated integrals. So example number two, I would like to take a modular curve. Let's suppose that X is a modular curve and S is a set of cusps. And then it's fun to see what kind of numbers we are getting here. And the output is that we are getting Rankine-Solberg integrals. Which are related to special values, as Rankine-Solberg method tells us. Here's why. So let's take, for example, the situation when we have two differential forms, one differential form omega 1, another differential form and omega 2 bar is conjugated, and put here some point S. Then the only tree which we can make here is this one. And so the integral we make is the following one. So we take integral. So if I repeat this picture, this is the only green edge which I have. And these two edges are purple, or actually they're blue, with this kind of choke. And so I have to take integral over the complex curve of the green function Sx, and the green function is nothing else but the Eisenstein series in this particular case, because one of the points, S, is at the cusp. So this is an Eisenstein series, a non-holomorphic Eisenstein series. And then what we do, we take omega 1 wedge omega 2 bar. And so now if you assume that they're Hecke eigenforms, then this integral, I mean, this integral is precisely the Rankine-Solberg integral, and it tells you that up to some interesting but less interesting constant than the one I'm going to write down, it's basically the L value of the omega 1 tensor omega 2 at the point 2. Now, if you do a similar integral for the situation when you have the same Mercedes graph, but you have two points S1 and S2 and one omega, then you will get integral of something like g of S1x d g of S2x omega, which is again a standard Rankine-Solberg integral. And again, it equals to the L value of this omega at point 2 up to some less interesting but also very important numbers. So we conclude that in this particular case, these integrals, they actually can be considered as a generalization of Rankine-Solberg integrals. And the theorem is that all of them are periods. For example, the fact that this integral is a period, it's not that obvious statement. It's related to L value at 0.2, but it's not that clear automatically that this is a period. So that's the kind of generalization which we get for modular curves. Now, I have, I guess, 3 minutes to answer Arthur questions about the Feynman integral. So where's the Feynman integral here? So what I want to do, I want to explain that this finite dimensional integrals come from some infinite dimensional setup. So I just take functions phi from my complex curve to n by n matrices. And I will introduce an action, S of phi, on such functions as follows. So if I see a matrix value function like that, I can make a Laplace operator out of it. Or I can make the following bilinear, trilinear expression. I can take phi and multiply it by d phi commutator d by d bar phi. What? Sorry? No. This is C infinity function. X is my curve. There is no Y in the game. Perhaps there was somewhere there. Actually, this Y is this X, but it doesn't matter. So this is a C infinity function from my curve to matrices. And I make two matrix value differential two forms, this one and that one. What I can do with differential, with matrix value forms, I can take a trace of them. And this will be bring me down to the functions, two forms, just scalar two forms on this curve. Now I put here some parameter in front of this term and integrate. And this, the last step has no meaning whatsoever. So you integrate over the space of all functions like that. So this doesn't really have sense yet, any sense. Now, but this is a definition of this. I'm going too fast. What I said is not what I intended to say. So the action, of course, does make perfect sense. It's just integral over the curve. Now, it, what doesn't make sense is what I wanted to do next. So I wanted to produce this Feynman integral over the space of all fields of the exponent of the action multiplied by some functional which depends on cyclic word W with respect to the space of all fields. Now, I have to define, of course, this functional, and it depends on this W which lives in my C check. But as soon as I do this, I get some expression which for physicists may make sense. So it's just this path integral over space of all functions. But in order to get numbers out of this, what I do, I take the limit when on goes, n goes to infinity, and h actually is small. And so I do this perturbative series expansion and calculate this series as a powers of this parameter and take the leading term. And it's a little theorem that if you do this, you end up exactly with the integrals which I considered before. So now the statement is that if you just consider this expression, that this expression carries all the same information as the real mixed Hodge structure on the P1 Hodge of X minus S V0. I didn't tell you how you produce this functional, so maybe just for the sake of completeness. So if you just have some, if you this W just cyclic product of S's like S1, S2, S3, and so on, what you do, you take the product of this phi of Si and take the trace, and this is the functional which corresponds to this work, cyclic work W. So this is indeed a polynomial on this function phi. Anyway, so if you do all that, and if you understand this integral using perturbative series expansions, then go all the way back, and then you see that this theorem tells you that this real mixed Hodge structure is just the same as the collection of the correlators for this Feynman integral. And the last word is that the same story can be applied when you change X to, let's say, a smooth regular projective variety over X. Actually, there is almost no changes to whatever I said before. The same construction. No. It's there will be no points because the curve will, the variety will be compact. It will be only omegas. But that's a technical. Okay.